This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Thursday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And we have made it to the end of another busy broadcasting week. And Hunter, happy Cheese Doodle Day to you.
Well,
I celebrate.
I'm just glad we have power at this point.
Right? So give a little update on that, because we were a little skin of the teeth here before we went on.
Yeah, so a good portion of Kaiser and Northeast Salem, Salem Electric area, went out at about 10:30 this morning. Of course, you know, the first thing you do is check and see if, you know, a car hit a pole or something like that outside.
Right.
It actually came back on around 10:45 for about 5 minutes or so, just long enough to boot up all the computers and try and get us back on the air. And then the moment I was right there, and then the power went back out, and it was out till about 35-40 minutes ago. And of course, at that point, then it's a run around and make sure everything is on. We're back on the air. So we got back on the air at about 11:30-ish. And hopefully everybody's now tuned in and ready to hear some conversation.
Ready to go. Yeah, real quick, I checked. It was Salem Electric, and I guess two transformers or something lost connection with the Bonneville Power Administration. So sounds like Salem Electric, man, rock on. They got it really back up really, really fast. So
yeah.
Kudos to them.
Yeah.
Kudos to them. All right, we're going to jump right in, because nothing's going to keep us down, and nothing is going to keep us talking to our friend in Florida, Jeff Reynolds, who is senior editor at Restoration-News.com. He's senior investigative researcher with Restoration America. He has full power where he is, plus I think probably some sun. Jeff, how are you?
I have a lot of sun.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm doing great. Yeah.
So obviously the power outage. Go ahead.
I had to come inside because the wind is up, so it's messing with my my microphone. But I'm in a nondescript conference room right now, and hopefully nobody comes in and bothers.
Right. Okay. Well, we had obviously, as we're kind of, you know, Hunter scrambling to get the power back up and all the systems rebooted, you're you know, sending me links to breaking news, because this is breaking news and it's kind of a big deal. Trump replaces Kristi Noem with Mark Wayne Mullen. Now, I really like Mark Wayne Mullen. Every time I've seen him anywhere and testify anywhere, I'm like, dude, I like this guy. I like Kristi Noem. There's a little bit of an edge in my voice there. I think you could probably hear. She was just testifying. I think
you
it
like
was Senate
Kristi Noem? Question mark.
I like Kristi Noem, and I do. I do overall. I know there was some the line of questioning from Senator Kennedy, kind of questioning her about some things, and then all of a sudden you see this replacement. So Senator Mark Wayne Mullen from Representative, a Republican from Oklahoma, is her replacement. This brings to a question to me, though. We already have a really thin margin in the Senate. And now we're taking away another vote?
Yeah, okay, so there's a lot to unpack there.
Okay.
What I read about with Kristi Noem was that when she testified at that Senate committee hearing, she said that Donald Trump signed off on her $200 million advertising expenditure, which spent a lot of time highlighting her personally. And that incensed Trump, who was already, you know, kind of iffy on her as it was. I think she's done a good job as the Homeland Security Director. I think she's done a lot to secure the border, and Trump even said so in the announcement. I like Mark Wayne Mullen as well. Every time he's on the radio or on TV, I agree with what he says.
Yeah,
I don't know how effective an administrator he's going to be, because he's been in the Senate, and you know, senators don't have the greatest track record of going into executive positions, you know, governor or president or whatever, and being effective. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I think he's got the right temperament for it. He's certainly got the right ideology for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be okay. Regarding the Senate vote count, that's an aspect I hadn't considered. But Let's remember he comes from Oklahoma, and there will be another Republican along in the next 5 minutes to replace him. So
right, and that,
I think
and that,
we'll be okay there.
I think we will too. You know, and of course you've got a lot of people in Oklahoma saying, well, the governor's a rhino. So, okay, but he's still a Republican. He's not going to put, you know, a James Tallarico type in there. So I think it'll be okay. And it should happen relatively quickly.
Yeah, we can guarantee that whoever takes over for Mark Wayne Mullen doesn't believe there are six genders.
And again, I really like Mark Wayne Mullen. And I, you know, Kristi Noem has been fine. I've had my criticisms of her. I've got a little bit of girl boss exhaustion thing going just in general. And I think that's just a me thing. Maybe not. Maybe it's another people thing. She's not been fired. I think that's pretty clear. A lot of people are out. She's been fired and she hasn't been. She's being moved. I don't know if it's lateral. I don't know if it's a promotion. I'm seeing, you know, again, it's breaking fast and furious. Again, I'm with you. I think overall she did a good job. I think this thing with the questioning from Kennedy did a little bit of damage, and then that whole ad campaign and what was it, $220 million for it, kind of went down a little bit like a jagged pill.
Right. So I actually think her new position is maybe the most intriguing part of this story that nobody's talking about, because, you know, Kristi Noem got fired. But she's moving into something called the Sword of the Americas, which is an advanced security apparatus Trump said he will announce it at Doral, Florida on Saturday. So we don't actually even know what it is yet, but it's some sort of forward security force to maintain the stability of the Western Hemisphere. And this is actually something that I've been writing about quite a bit lately, the Monroe Doctrine and the Donroe Doctrine.
Yeah.
The reestablishment of muscular foreign policy. And if she moves into a muscular foreign policy position, maybe this is a way that she can not only save her career, but also do something quite productive, which anything that advances the Monroe Doctrine is great for America and is bad for our adversaries, namely Iran, Venezuela, China, and Russia.
Yeah. Let me read real quick for folks, because it is just breaking, his statement on this. He says, I'm pleased to announce that the highly respected United States Senator of the great state of Oklahoma, Mark Wayne Mullen, will become the United States Secretary of Homeland Security, DHS, effective March 31st, 2026. The current Secretary, Kristi Noem, who has served well and has had numerous and spectacular results, especially on the border, will be moving to Special Envoy for the Shield of the Americas, our new security initiative in the Western Hemisphere. We are announcing, like you said, on Saturday in Doral, Florida. I thank Kristi for her service at Homeland. So all in all, it looks pretty amicable. And it, like you said, I'm very curious to find out about the Shield of the Americas for the reasons that you articulated.
Yeah, in fact, that's a big project I've been working on. I'm doing a spread for our new magazine. By the way, I'm letting the cat out of the bag a little bit on. We have a new magazine coming out. So it's called Independence Magazine. And we have plans to rapidly expand circulation on it. We have a very small circulation for our first issue, but it's going to rapidly expand here in the next few months. So. But I'm working on a 3,000-word spread for the magazine on the Monroe Doctrine and the knock-on effects that you've had from first Venezuela and then Iran and then probably Cuba, possibly Mexico after that. And it's not necessarily military force, but it's taking control of the oil supply and reestablishing American dominance over our trade routes and reestablishing our dominance over the Western Hemisphere and not tolerating bad actors in the Western Hemisphere. And that means we are putting maximum pressure on, this directly led to Iran because Iran and Venezuela were tied at the hip. There were Hezbollah training camps in Venezuela that were being run by Cuban and Iranian army officers. There are all kinds of. This is not just about the oil. This is not just about Nicolas Maduro and the drug trafficking. Although those were in and of themselves justification enough for the actions that we've taken. but there's so many other huge geopolitical effects that are going out in waves, and it's going to completely change the global order and who's in charge and who's going to be running our shipping lanes and all of that stuff. Who's going to have the leverage based on the flow of petroleum and the ability to produce their own energy, because China was significantly impacted. They were Venezuela's biggest petroleum customer. And I think it was something like 25% of their supply of oil came from Iran or from Venezuela, and another 15% came from Iran. So now all of a sudden they're going to have all kinds of problems running their factories and running their war machine and running their military buildup. So this is going to have an immediate effect, and it's going to reestablish America as the dominant force in the world.
Wow. And so, that's fascinating. And I'm very curious to learn more about the magazine and getting in on that and doing a deeper dive. Everything seems to be so surface. It's either, a quick tweet or whatever. And then people form a lot of opinions based on a lot of surface information. So I think this is really valuable for really digging deeper in. We always hear he's playing 4D chess. This does kind of sound like it actually is.
Which part? Trump or
as
the
far
magazine?
As well, Trump.
Yeah.
Trump, not the Mac. Yeah. Well, actually, both a little bit, because the more you can arm yourself with knowledge and information, the better as far as for being a commentator and having opinions and finding out and knowing what's going on. Arming yourself with more information is always good. But I was speaking more about Trump only because a lot of people, everyone's got a hot take on this. Everyone's got an opinion on this. Yeah, go ahead, Hunter.
That's what I was going to say. I'm literally like, the media and the Trump detractors want you to look at it as a surface level thing, that the only reason we could possibly go into Venezuela or Iran is because of oil and we're just killing the innocents. And that's what they want. They want those hot takes rather than dig a little bit beneath the surface and realize the strategy and the real reasons for these kinds of actions.
Right. And that's exactly right, Hunter. And, it's way easier to deal with hot takes than it is to deal with the truth.
Yeah.
So that's why they gleefully let the narrative build up that, Trump is a warmonger and Trump is unhinged and all of that stuff, because it's easier to deal with. When you step back and look at the huge implications of all of these actions, and the fact that, oh, by the way, it's not going to be a forever war, and there's a clear end game, and there's a clear objective to all of these things, as Pete Hegseth has articulated. Mm-hmm. It's not just some sort of they try to portray him in all kinds of he's unhinged, he's unstable, and all that stuff. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, we should maybe get a subscription for all the little old ladies that have their walkers out and their signs out on the sidewalk in Ashland in Oregon. Maybe a good read, ladies. Have a good read here. Sit down.
Maybe I'll come visit and hand out copies.
Right. Well, that's fascinating. I want to learn. So I'm assuming we can find out more about that if we go to restoration-news.com.
I've let the cat out of the bag a little bit here. We're not quite ready to announce, but it will be on the website here in the next couple of weeks. The first edition is available now. And we'll talk after we get offline.
Okay.
Here, and I'll mail you a copy.
Excellent. And I did see on X that you're expanding your writing team as well.
Yes.
Honey Badger Mom.
Yes.
Is working on her first piece. I was really happy to see that. I think that's going to be a great addition.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, this piece is coming out tomorrow, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So first thing Friday morning, and it's a doozy. It's talking about the meeting in Portland where they talked about the strategy for overcoming the supremacy clause and resisting ICE enforcement, and how they're using Portland as a template, and they want to expand it to other blue cities. So all of the worst crap that happens in Oregon is once again being, groomed to go to other states. So it's a great article. I worked with her on putting it together and editing it, and she did a fantastic job. She actually got some inside information that not too other many, I don't think anybody's reported on.
Yeah, yeah, I saw the tweet today, and I'm super excited about that as well. So we'll be definitely on the lookout. She's a good addition. She does amazing work over there. Brave, brave, brave woman. Okay, we're running a little long on this segment. Again, we're talking with Jeff Reynolds today. Restoration News, restoration-news.com. And as I always say, bookmark it. It's a great site. We're going to take our first break. You are listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by the Perlin Mill and Color Tile of Salem.
All righty, we are chatting today with Jeff Reynolds from restoration-news.com. So I know you've been, I know you're in Florida and you don't have to, but God bless you. You still do pay attention to Oregon politics. So we are in primary season.
You can
season.
See the sun there, right?
Yeah, I know. Stop it. You're such a brat. So we've been following all this. We're in the thick of primary season right now. And so the gubernatorial primary is hot and heavy. I pretty much think, and I think Hunter, you probably agree, it's Drazen, Dudley, Deal, Medina Bethel, the top ones.
Yeah, well, those are definitely the five getting the most play out there. You're seeing them, you know, like we said yesterday, Ed and Danielle and David Medina are going to be at a town hall coming up here. And then, of course, Christine and Chris Dudley are kind of positioning themselves in the Portland market a little more than outside at this point.
So on, I think it was Tuesday, a new poll came out, or a polling organism, a website, it was called Predict Oregon, and we talked a little bit about it, really kind of looking at it. This looks like it's a mechanism for floating the idea that Chris Dudley is uniquely positioned to challenge, to drop out of the governor's race and to step over into the United States Senate race with a good chance of really being a strong opponent to Jeff Merkley, who I don't like. I want him out of there, but I'm not thrilled with whoever has stepped up to run. Who was it, Hunter, the other day? It was David Brock Smith. Mm-hmm. And then there may be one or two others, but, you know, basically. So I know, Jeff, I sent you an email kind of about that a little bit. What are your thoughts on that? What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you that the last several senatorial cycles have underwhelmed with the caliber of candidate that we've been able to recruit, right? So so Merkley and Wyden have skated all the way, you know, they've never
For
faced
years.
Any real threat. Yeah, you know?
Right.
Geez, not since Jim Huffman, right?
Right. Oh, gosh. Wow. There's a name. Wow.
Yeah.
Right?
That's when I first got involved. It was him and Scott Bruin running for CD5 were the first two races I got involved with back
in the
Tea Party days. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think what you need in a even more than a gubernatorial candidate is you need a name ID. You need some sort of what they call in Hollywood a Q rating, where, you know, people know you and trust you and like you.
Yeah.
I think in a statewide federal race like that, that plays more to Dudley's strengths because, frankly, his policy stuff is not that strong. And it wasn't that strong the first time he ran in 2010. Mm-hmm. And he almost won because of the Tea Party, but and in fact, he only lost because of Multnomah County shenanigans on election night.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that he's gathering the same amount of momentum that he did in 2010. So as the analysis pointed out, he doesn't have a lot of time to make this decision. The primary is only a couple of months away.
And the deadline's on the 10th.
In fact, I think that. Yeah, the filing deadline. So, yeah, exactly. So so it's got to be done. But I think that would generate a lot of headlines just, you know, switching to that race. And then he could kind of, you know, go mock speed to the primary date. I don't think anybody would beat him in a primary right now. Right. So they need to have plenty of time to build a real Senate campaign.
Exactly. And one of the other things, obviously, is fundraising. You've got to be able to kind of jump out of the gate and be able to raise money. I think Merkley right now has a war chest of $1.5 million or so.
I think it was more than
Dudley
that.
Had,
I think it was like $5.9 million. Yeah.
But Dudley's managed to raise $500,000 in just about a month. So, you know, there's a lot of pluses to this.
When you say war chest, I immediately think of Paxton versus Cornyn and the, you know, tens of millions of dollars they've blown in the primary. So
is this is know, more of a hope chest.
Quaint by comparison.
It's a hope chest. It's just a little hope chest.
But yeah, in Oregon terms, that's quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I always thought, you know, back when I was chair of the Multnomah County Republicans back in the Tea Party days, it occurred to me that if we got an infusion of a couple of million dollars, you know, in the Tea Party or in the county parties or whoever we wanted to send the money to, that level of money, and that's a drop in the bucket nationally, but that amount of money would completely change Oregon politics if used properly. Mm-hmm.
It just seems like have people given up. Nobody ever wants to drop that money in. I just think this is an intriguing idea. I don't know whether it's going to happen. And again, I don't know egos. I don't know Chris Dudley personally. I don't know any of the, well, I knew some of them, but not Dudley. But there are a lot of things where this could be a plus. But again, time is short. He's got 5 days to make a decision. I don't necessarily see this happening. But I mean, if there's a groundswell of people that say, you know, let's recruit you to do that, it would be interesting to see.
Yeah, I got to believe that the leader in the clubhouse for the gubernatorial primary has to be Drazen, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and so given that calculus, and he's got to overcome the guy behind the gas tax and Ed Beal, and he's got to, you know, cobble together enough votes from, you know, Danielle Bethel's been out there beating the streets. So.
Yeah, well, let's go. We can come back and finish this up on the other side. We got to take that hard break for the bottom of the hour news. Come on back with Jeff Reynolds.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon on Name Tag Day is brought to you by Greenacres Landscape and GA at Home.
Welcome back, everybody. Hello, my name is Denise.
So my first thought when I read that is, do you think that the people of Portland who wear the name tag that says, hello, my pronouns are they, them, or he, she, they, they, it, whatever, would switch if we just said, let's get rid of the pronouns and let's just call you by your name? It sounds a little more personal that way.
Doesn't it? Well, yeah. And besides, you only use pronouns when you're not in the room. So what do you care what I call you? And if you're pulling that on me, it's not going to be that nice, maybe. All right, we're continuing our conversation with Jeff Reynolds, senior editor at restoration-news.com. Bookmark it, do it. Okay, I want to switch gears because this was also kind of hitting today too. Everyone's talking about the SAVE Act and what's going on in Texas because we had the primary results. Poor Jasmine.
Well, it had to be racist or something. I don't know. That's what she says. You know,
clearly Republican.
Some voting shenanigans by the Republicans in the Democratic primary.
Sure. But speaking of Republicans in that race, because we've got sitting Senator John Cornyn and current Attorney General Ken Paxton. So there's been a lot of talk about Cornyn refusing to abolish the filibuster to pass the SAVE Act. And so then Trump. Truthed, is that what it is? He truthed.
Okay, it works.
Yeah, out that who he hasn't endorsed anybody yet, but whoever he does endorse, the other person needs to step aside. So I want to read this this tweet from Paxton that was sent out today at 9:18. The Save America Act is the most important bill in the U.S. Senate that he could ever pass, and I'm committed to helping President Trump get it done. I would consider dropping out of this race if Senate leadership agrees to lift the filibuster and pass the Save America Act. John Cornyn is a coward who has refused to support abolishing the filibuster to pass this bill. Now fake news reporters and the establishment are trying to destroy me with misinformation. Hang on a sec. Sorry, I had a cough here. Mm-hmm. Thanks for my cough button. The truth is clear. No one has been more loyal to Donald Trump than me, fighting the stolen 2020 election, being in Mar-a-Lago when he announced his 2024 campaign, and standing with him in New York in the face of lawfare for the good of our country and for hope. Oh, I'm losing my voice.
I'll get it. For the good of the country and for the good of passing President Trump's agenda, I am determined to help get this done. And that's one way of approaching it, especially on an issue as big as this, because if we want these free and fair elections they tell us we have, we actually need the SAVE Act and kind of require ID for that one thing that, it's bad, according to the other side, if you ask for identification of who someone is.
Yeah, no, voter ID is it's an 85-90% issue that everybody believes in. Even Democrats approve of the idea of voter ID by like 65% or 70%. Mm-hmm. It is the fact that not a single Democrat will stick their neck out and say that they will support voter ID is an insult to their own voters, never mind the very idea of America. The fact that we don't have to validate who we are and that we're eligible to vote before voting is an absurdity. We've seen so many shenanigans over the years. So I don't need to relitigate the reasons for voter ID, but the mm-hmm. idea that they're resisting it is just absurd. And, you know, it just goes to show, somebody mentioned the other day to me that really the greatest enemy of America is squishy Republicans.
Yes, you know, they, agree.
When they collaborate with the evil people on the other side, and they refuse to take a stand for conservative values or even American values, whose side are you actually on?
And a lot of people, it's like, at least with the Democrats, you know where you stand. I mean, they're pretty much out there with the Republicans. I mean, I hear, unibrow party and everything else. I think it's interesting on this thread, Scott Pressler, who we've had on the show in the past, who's been out there, the persistence. Holy cow, I'm freaking out in a good way. He's, a lot of people, this is playing really well. This is brilliant. You are up to something. We need you, Ken Paxton. And then, I hate that it has come to this, but it has, it seems like.
Yeah, it's this is the reason why John Cornyn got primaried in the first place, is because he refuses to take a stand for conservative values and Republican values, the party that he supposedly is a member of. Now, he'll claim that his job is as senator is to represent the state of Texas and its voters. Mm. But the entire state of Texas wants voter ID, and they want to be sure that California's votes don't invalidate their votes because they're allowing illegal immigrants by the hundreds of thousands to vote in their elections.
Yeah, see, and that's where I come from, is every state that currently requires voter identification needs the states that won't to do it to prove that everything is on the up and up. And we saw, in 2020, a handful of states, even if all the bellwether counties went for Trump, those few states are what swayed the election that gave us Biden for 4 years with his open borders.
Well,
That's exactly right.
Yeah, it is exactly right. I guess it comes down to, can Cornyn be trusted to keep his word on this if he does, come out and affirmatively say that he will do that? And I don't know that I have my trusting nature seems a little shabby around the edges lately.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's obviously been there for forever. And yeah. So has John Thune, the Republican Senate leader. And he also is non-committal. He's made noises about the filibuster, but he hasn't committed. And so, the guys that have been there the longest and become part of a swamp for so long are the ones that we're trying to trust to get this thing through. So you're right to be concerned that, Paxton, I hope that it works. I really hope that it works, but, we'll see.
Well, I would think that I think their runoff is sometime in May, so we've got nearly 2 months. I would think on something like this, Cornyn could make an active display of following through before Paxton would need to withdraw himself.
That's a fair point. That is a really good point.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you think about when, like, when Biden was in there and he had slim majorities, but they still managed to push every bit of his agenda through. And why it's just so difficult on the Republican side that, you know, and it's so frustrating to see this. It's like this should be a real no-brainer. If there's a no-brainer of no-brainers, this is it.
Right. And so the swamp creatures only care about their own power. And the institution only cares about protecting the institution. So the idea of protecting the Senate as an institution is great on paper, except that the Senate only is supposed to function in a way that responds to the American people and the desires of the states and the citizens. If it's there to work against the American people in service of furthering the institution, then it's become institutionalized and useless to its original function.
Well, see, I always take the biggest argument that they're pushing out right now for no voter ID, besides it being in 85-90% people want it, is the woman who gets married and has to change her name and can't get an ID and can't vote because I go, you find me the green-haired girl power activist that is getting married, let alone getting married, and then after that changing her name. So I would think this would only disqualify those conservative trad wives that only vote the way that they're told by their, you know, conservative husbands.
So, Denise, after you got married, how long did you go without voting because you couldn't get ID?
Oh, I've never voted since. I've never been able to figure it out.
Can't even drive a car.
It's so hard.
That ID is so hard to get. You couldn't even drive a car. Nothing. You've got that nice hybrid sitting outside that just sits there. And
I just can't drive
dust.
It because I can't figure out how to change. I can't. I'm so verklempt about it all. I don't know what to do. That's how stupid this all is. Pass the SAVE Act, for God's sakes.
Yeah, all seriously. Right. This is a no-brainer.
It is. Let's go ahead and take our last break. We're talking with Jeff Reynolds from RestorationNews.com, Restoration-News.com. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Cozy's New York Deli and Salem Clinic.
All right. We are wrapping up our conversation today with Jeff Reynolds from Restoration-News.com. So today is also National Absence Day, and this is something, for those of you who aren't familiar, I don't know, a lot of people saw the film Moulin Rouge. That's one of those, it's like cilantro, or actually absinthe. You either love it or hate it. I happen to love it. And so there's a lot of sort of mythology around absinthe, the green fairy, and I probably could have used some absinthe during my little coughing drag there earlier. Might not have hurt. But Jeff, I know you've got kind of a connection to, you've actually tasted it. I never have. So give us a little info on it, because I've always been intrigued by it.
Yeah, I actually used to be invested in a micro distillery in Portland back when I was living there. They went bust and I lost all my money, but the booze was really good. They did an absinthe, and it was, you know, the guy, the distiller, did a whole bunch of research on this, and it was really good. So it kind of has an anisette sort of a flavor, like a licorice flavor, but it's very subtle. You know, I'm not a licorice fan at all, but it's very subtle. It's not overpowering, but it also has so many different botanical ingredients that it creates a super complex flavor. It's very multi-layered flavor. It's really quite good. And the cool thing about absinthe is that it has all kinds of chemical properties where it reacts to water differently based on the temperature and based on how much water you add to the drink, or if you add ice or not. You know, so sometimes it'll turn completely cloudy if it's warm water, or if it's cold water, it'll turn more into like a syrup. It changes the viscosity of it. It's really much more than just like adding water to bourbon or something.
Interesting. And it always seems to sort of be tied in with sort of the bohemians and the and creative people. And like it's supposed to sort of be a mind opener. And, you know, I've, again, with the green fairy and everything. And so I've never, like I said, I've never tasted. I always see, you know, the fancy little silver spoon with the ice or the sugar cube. And it's sort of a little ritual that goes along with it. So I just found that really interesting that it today is National Absinthe Day and that you do have that connection. But it kind of brings me to a different conversation as far as creativity. And we've had this conversation before, but there's a tweet out there by a woman named Carlin Borisenko, and this got my attention because I agree with her. Leftists use arts and music to push their messaging. This is how they've captured your children. The right does not do this at all. Do you guys agree or disagree with that sentiment?
Oh, I fully agree. I mean, that's why when we see these award shows, they bank on the Sabrina Carpenters and the Billie Eilishes and to be the face of these things because they know they're bringing a lot
of Bad Bunny.
And yeah, they're bringing all these young people into the fold that they don't even understand the messaging they're receiving, but they take it and run with it because someone they idolize said it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just think about music being sort of the soundtrack to our lives. When I look back on the music that sort of informed my whole coming up, and those things stay with you forever. And so many messages and worldviews can be inserted into music or into books or into film.
Well, that's right. And you know, we actually have a moral obligation to maintain the myths of our society.
Yeah.
You know, whether that be your religion or the founding of the nation, you know, and I'm not saying myth as like, you know, something that's not believable or that's not true. What I'm saying is we should tell ourselves the stories that unite us and bring us together. You know, like the founding of the nation is truly miraculous, and we need to tell that story to every generation. You know, and I think that using whatever media exists today, you know, it was novels in the 1800s. Today it's movies and video games. You know, or TikTok videos or whatever, you know, medium you're using. So we have an obligation if we believe in maintaining our nation and our republic and our constitution, we have an obligation to tell those myths and to further those myths in a way that people accept and believe them and take them on as their own.
I agree. And the left has really kind of hijacked a lot of those narratives and taken it over. And I think it's a myth it's wrong to assume that all creativity is on the left, that you must be someone of the left to be who is creative. We know full well in Hollywood there are so many closeted conservatives who don't come out. And granted, a lot of them are probably in the trades. They may be, you know, the best boy or the gaffer or whatever. But there's also, I mean, I remember, you know, hearing from Andrew Klavan all the time, someone who I absolutely have so much respect for, who came up through Hollywood and did keep his mouth shut until he couldn't. There is so much creativity, a wealth of talent that just doesn't, I don't know why the right doesn't, or we get really cheesy Christian movies, which I'm glad to see Angel right. Studios coming in and busting that thing wide open and giving us some really, and Daily Wire as well.
Yeah, and I've seen conservatives even push back on Daily Wire. Like, why are they wasting all this money on entertainment stuff when they should be winning elections? And you know, like, no, you're just not getting it. Whether or not they're putting out a good product is debatable. But what's not debatable is the importance of trying.
Yeah.
And getting something out there that. Again, advances the mythology that we want our tribe to believe in.
Andrew Breitbart got it.
Well,
absolutely. Politics is downstream from culture.
Yep.
Yeah. To me, the idea that you know, if the Daily Wire just took all this money and did away with the children's program and other stuff that is spreading these messages and putting it all into one election, it's like, so you're willing to put so much forth effort into winning this one election at the sacrifice of every future election, because if those kids don't have something else to intake and see these stories, they're going to be like the people we see in the streets right now, who everything that the Republicans do is an assault on their very soul.
Right. and that's the myth that the other side is using. That's the mythology that they're pushing, right? Is that they've created this whole narrative infrastructure that they push. It just goes out automatically. It goes out almost by osmosis. And our job is to fight back against that. Our job is to present the opposing view. And if we're not doing that, then we're losing.
And to do it in a way that is creative and something that you don't feel like you're being hit over the head with the message like the left does. I mean, again, one of my favorite YouTube channels out there is the Critical Drinker, who's constantly beating up on the left, because that's where the left has fallen flat on this, because you are being beaten over the head with the message. And that's why they're failing. And so I think we could maybe take a lesson from what the left is doing with this heavy-handed, ham-fisted messaging, and just come out with, we have great, like you said, the mythology, the lore, the founding of our nation, all the stories that have gone into it are rich, and they're multi-layered and nuanced. And I think, you know, woe to us that we're not sharing those stories in whatever medium we as artists have to put forth to the world.
But it doesn't even need to be an explicit message either. It just needs to be something that's entertaining.
Storytelling.
We need to engage in storytelling. And even if the story isn't necessarily, you know, Ben Franklin and John Adams, you know, riding through the streets of Philadelphia or whatever it is, it has to be something that has a message. You know, let's think back to the books that we were read as children.
Mm-hmm.
They all had a moral, and they were all morally based, right?
Yep.
They were, it wasn't necessarily Christian, but it was, nope. It was some sort of higher message. It was some sort of, you know, this is the way to do things right, and this is the way to do things wrong. And you got those in nursery rhyme format at a very early age. And it was formative, even though it wasn't explicitly, you know, Republican or Democrat. In fact,
right.
if it had been, it would have been it never would have gotten published in those days.
I don't think the Brothers Grimm were partisan. You know, I mean, they just scared the crap out of you as a kid. It's like, well, I'm not going to do that because I could get eaten by a wolf. And I mean, and they were
a witch.
Or a witch, right? I mean, but you're right. And we all are steeped in those stories that did inform our morality, but you don't see much of it anymore. And it's almost like there's this shying away from it. And I'm so tired of, I don't get involved in politics but you don't get involved in the culture either. And then if you don't get involved, something's going to fill that vacuum for your kids. And so even if it's just actively searching out alternatives to what the mainstream is offering.
Yeah. You know, there's also a point here that, it's not just about sending out a moral message. You have to tell stories, and you have to be effective, and you have to bring people along.
Yeah.
So I think that's the most important issue.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I always go back to those younger days when, you know, if there was a propaganda film, you could tell from a mile away it was a propaganda film. And now they've literally pushed that propaganda into every aspect of life, whether it's a children's cartoon, whether it's a children's movie, whatever it is, where it's subtle enough that a lot of adults don't recognize it going in. But when you actually stop and think about it, you go, wow, this is an anti-Earth. This is anti-human. This is, you know, whatever it is. And those messages come right, you know, out but it takes that little bit of thought to it.
Oh, I just think about two movies that come to mind: Fast Times at Ridgemont High and Dirty Dancing. And you look at the side stories in that and what they were promoting. And they weren't promoting it overtly. It was just a side story that was normalizing it, which is abortion.
Well, right. And I'll that's a very good point. I'll give you another example. I think Hunger Games and the Maze Runner movie.
We're going to have to.
There is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Jeff Reynolds, as always, thank you so much. Everybody, that's it for us this week. We'll see you next week.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denason Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.